Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rabona podcast. Once again, I'm Musa Kwonga, joined by Michael Da Silva and Ryan Hun. And this week we are talking transfers.
Transfers. Can I do some admin?
You can.
I wanted to say we had a great response to last week's podcast. So thanks to everyone who tuned in, tweeted us about it. And I think we've got quite a lot of new subscribers. So wanted to do the rating stuff at the beginning in case people have switched off at the end when silly. So if anyone is listening on iTunes or subscribing on iTunes, please give us a rating and a review, preferably 5 stars, because we are a new up-and-coming podcast, I'd say, and it does help us grow it.
We are the Callum Hudson-Odoi of podcasts.
Oh.
So topical. See what I did there?
I like that.
Oh my goodness. Segue to transfers, and Mr. Hudson-Odoi could be on his way to Bayern Munich from Chelsea, which would be interesting.
I feel like we've been saying this for a while.
Yeah, it's turned into a saga, hasn't it?
A saga? Listen.
Is it a saga yet?
Not being funny, but like, transfers are sagas. That's literally the description. That's what they are.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm here I'm here for this content. No, I'm sorry to be militant, but I'm here for this content.
Well, I think Hudson-Odoi, my personal view is that he should stay at Chelsea.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I disagree.
Wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, I think he should stay at Chelsea because, let's compare him with Sancho. He's kind of like I've got him in early this week. Sancho left Man City because he didn't have a look in. Like, he wasn't even being considered to start. He was behind Phil Foden in the pecking order, and Foden's only played a handful of minutes this season.
Right.
So the move to Dortmund when they came in for him was logical. It was a logical next step to get playing time. And it's, you know, it was a risk, but it still made quite a lot of sense in many ways. Hudson-Odoi is getting time at Chelsea. It's not like he's not playing.
Right.
He's getting minutes. He scored a really, really nice goal against Sheffield Wednesday in the Cup. He's not starting Premier League games, okay. But I think his path to success is in front of him at Chelsea.
Ah, but here's the thing. We don't know what he's been offered at Bayern. Now, Bayern have two great Asian strikers.
Money always comes into it.
But this is, don't get me wrong, absolutely, and I completely accept that. Having said that, Chelsea obviously care about youth development. That's why they are handing out short-term contracts to people over 30. Mm-hmm. So they do care about his development. There's no question. Mm. But Bayern really are the prize because they are a transitional point in their history. They've got a new coach with fresh ideas. Kovac is turning things around slowly at Bayern. You've got these two aging wingers, right, Robin and Ribery, and then Hudson-Odoi may look at that and be like, this is the kind of gap that a playmaker hasn't seen since Ozil arrived at Madrid. You know, when Ozil got to Madrid, part of the new guard, and at one point Mourinho said, this guy could be the number 10 for Madrid for 10 years. Hudson-Odoi could look at Bayern right now and be like, I could stay at Chelsea and get games here, sure, but I go to Bayern with this Bundesliga. Do you know what I mean? Like,
there's a chance for him.
It's a big prize.
There's a chance for him for sure, but I don't think it's as obvious. And as because Bayern don't have that track record like Dortmund do of blooding young players. Bayern are at that slightly higher level where, you know, a bit like Real Madrid or Barca, they buy players that are almost at their peak. They enjoy the success of that player, you know, during their peak years. Hudson-Odoi, I think, is going to suffer because Koeman's been waiting in the wings already for years to fill that role. They've got Serge Gnabry, who I think is ready to, I mean, he plays slightly not so, he can play centrally as well, but yeah. They've got Goretzka in the middle. They've just signed Alphonso Davies, young Canadian player, really good prospect. And I just think Odoi, I think he'd get minutes at Bayern, but I just don't think it would be significantly more than what he'll get at Chelsea.
But this is the funny thing, and I love those, I mean, don't get me wrong, those reasons are all absolutely solid. At the same time, you look at Sancho, and Sancho just kicked the door down. He had Marco Reus, Christian Pulisic. He had this unbelievable pecking order.
And by the way, I think if Hudson-Odoi goes to Bayern, I would support the move fully.
For sure.
And I think, you know, he would be showing ambition by doing it. My only concern is whether he needs to do it. I think Sancho needed to do it.
Right.
I just don't know.
I think it's a trade-off, though, because I think if you look at Ruben Loftus-Cheek as well, as an example, someone who probably would be able to get, you know, be starting games for a number of top European clubs, I think.
Yeah.
And it looked as though he was going to get more opportunities this season with Chelsea. Every time he's played really, really well, and he's not really getting a look in again. And I might be wrong, but I can't remember Hudson-Odoi getting serious game time until a lot of the rumours came out that he was going to go.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it just depends if he wants to be coming off the bench or starting the odd, you know, League Cup game or FA Cup game for Chelsea, or like you said, Musa, and like Michael's been saying for ages as well about Sancho, is that Sancho's kind of created this example of how good it can be, and often, you know, the grass can be greener.
Mm.
The thing is, I don't see if he goes to Bayern how it could end up any worse than what his situation is at Chelsea. That's the difference, and. You know, with Ribery and Robin probably done, that's a major part of how Bayern play football. And I think that he would be a real success there. And then his stock just rises,
The biggest enemy that Chelsea have got right now is that WhatsApp group that we all know exists. There's a WhatsApp group. Sancho is part of it and Reece Nelson's part of it. And he's like, oh yeah, come over to Germany. And they're sending him pictures of their trips to Bremen.
Yeah.
They're showing the nights out. They're like, oh yeah, we're here, we're there, we're doing this. Have you been? Oh, where are you? Oh, we're down by the lakes. What? We're in the forest. What? Listen, that WhatsApp group has to be shut down.
You better come here before March 29th.
Listen.
Didn't you say that he's now handed in a transfer request?
Yeah, I think that was on Friday. Hudson-Odoi put in an official transfer request to Chelsea, so he's really trying to push through the move.
The thing is, I've got to say about this Chelsea, for it to get to this point, for a player to be coming out and saying so, because we all know in football now, like, for stuff to leak out to this point, leaks can be strategic, but for it have got to this point where his sense of his prospects have deteriorated so far that he wants to make a move, that's a challenge. And I've got to say as well about Bayern, They normally do buy the fully formed players, but when they make long-term bets, they make them really smart.
Mm.
And they did that investment in Javi Martinez. If Javi Martinez wasn't injured, he'd have been one of the best centre-backs and midfielders in Europe. Actually, he was for a period, even with the injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So when Bayern make a long-term, you know, not even a bet, they don't do bets, they do investments. So they will have approached him, not just with the money, but with a plan.
They don't usually spend very much.
Right,
know,
so the kind Tolisso of figures
is
they're
looking their, at. Their record signing, 30-something million.
Yeah.
One thing I want to say about Hudson-Odoi, though, is that he's not had any loan moves either, which is, I think, interesting because, you know, Chelsea are notorious for how many players they have out on loan. And the fact that he's not even had a loan move yet and he seems quite keen to go, I think is quite interesting. So, I mean, usually you'd see with Reece Nelson, for example, decent loan move to Hoffenheim. Actually, Arsenal could really do with a winger, and he'll probably play a major part in the squad next season. Hudson-Odoi hasn't had that loan move. I mean, he's only 18.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't doubt Hudson-Odoi's talent. He looks really, really ready to make that step up. But if he was making a move to Gladbach,
right,
then I'd say 100% go for it. Mm-hmm. You're definitely going to play every single week. I just don't want to see his development regress.
I mean, that is a point, like, you know, if he's kind of moving from one situation to another, but it's just in Munich as opposed to London.
with a bit more money.
It's a gamble, though, isn't it? It's like Bram Diaz going to Madrid from Man City. Bram Diaz is not getting game time at all at City. Guardiola was a big believer in his talent and then came out with a comment recently going, you know, if a player wants to stay, we can't, you know, we can, but doesn't want to stay, we can't make him stay, which is kind of almost like slightly throwing Bram Diaz under the bus.
Yeah.
Because if you bought Riyad Mahrez to strengthen your title-winning side, you're not going to get many games for Bram Diaz.
And he played the first game after signing for Real Madrid.
Right,
he played in that game.
Exactly. Now, what I think Hudson-Odoi and Bram Diaz have done in very different ways is, in terms of the kind of philosophy behind the move, these are very interesting times to move to Real and Bayern. It's up for grabs. Absolutely up for grabs. I mean, to an extent, you look at Barcelona now, to move to Barcelona now as a central midfielder, very different position. Aging Rakitic, well, Frankie de Jong, you know, this is why it's ideal for him at this point, because the game time you're going to get, Rafinha's injured, Coutinho's not quite settling. This is the perfect time
to come in, to put it mildly.
Yeah, does that make sense? So to come in and do something. So I don't know, it's fascinating that players are having the bravery to go outside the comfort zones, I think.
And that is something that we all support.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a good time to mention De Jong, though.
Yeah. Well, it's the final week of the transfer window, so should we rattle through
a couple, let's get into it. Frankie de Jong.
Should we put some music behind it?
Yeah.
Frankie de Jong is the most Dutch football transfer I can imagine. Signed off by Overmars, handing over to his old club Barcelona. And I think I said to you before, like, you can just imagine Johan Cruyff somewhere getting out his chalkboards. He can just, because it's his thing. Like, and De Jong can play anywhere in the kind
of there's a history of Ajax to Barca, right? Similar philosophies as well.
It's just so good.
I love this signing. I think I tweeted about it, just how good a signing this is. Even
so
for that
pure,
money,
isn't it?
It's just, he is such a good football player. And someone who I think could really be like without kind of getting too over the top, but he could be like a transformational signing for Barca.
Yeah,
agreed.
Especially that midfield has not really recovered in terms of like the shift that it made once Xavi moved on and then Iniesta's role kind of diminished. I think Rakitic is brilliant. He's just a different kind of midfielder.
Yeah.
And I think that someone like De Jong, the amount of games that Barcelona play where they don't need a defensive midfielder, he can play the role that Busquets plays, because there is no replacement for Busquets at Barca. And he can play that role. He can play Iniesta's old role. He can play where Rakitic is now. I mean, he's just amazing. And I love that signing.
It's interesting how Barcelona evolve over the next kind of 3 to 5 years, because they've already lost like Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, and you've got Messi as well. He's 31, I believe. Right. But these are all guys that in the next few years are going to be gone, you know, sadly. And I don't know how... I just hope that there's a plan in place to replace them, but more than that, like a philosophy behind it, you know.
I'm looking forward to that. Barcelona 2024 Champions League finals midfield with Messi and De Jong and...
Messi seems to be dropping.
Yeah,
deeper,
Messi will end up in midfield. Yeah.
Let me jump in there for a second and look at what Barca have done in terms of renewal and just say, wow.
Yeah.
Look, Semedo.
Good goal of the weekend, by the way.
Alba's absolutely great
first goal, I believe, right? For Barca?
Maybe, yeah.
Jordi Alba's got a while yet to run. You've got, and he's actually getting better, Jordi Alba. You have, obviously, Dembele, who is just nailing it.
Yeah.
But on the signing of De Jong, what's fascinating is it kind of makes the Barca philosophy come full circle, because after the departure of Iniesta, Valverde did a really smart thing. He didn't try and replace Iniesta. He basically sacrificed match control for directness, brought in Paulinho. That was actually such a philosophical choice. That was like, we're not going to fill this gap. We're going to add a late runner from midfield and they're not going to be able to work it out.
Yeah.
And the league, they never worked out to deal with Paulinho.
Yeah.
Never. They're like, where's this sort of chaotic player who comes in and just kind of raids? We're expecting a different type of build-up. But what Frankie de Jong is going to do is going to return match control to Barcelona's philosophy. And we haven't seen match control since. Iniesta and Xavi kind of left, but now we've got Arthur and Frankie de Jong.
Interesting.
That's
And the real skill is to continue to be successful during that transitional period.
Yeah. Valverde does not get enough credit for that because, of course, Barca have the highest wage from the world and they're Barca.
But he's a very clever manager.
I love Valverde. I think he's great. I think he's not. I think he's underrated. And I think you look at Guardiola wanted him to succeed him when he left Barca because he knew that Valverde was a master of transition. He was someone that could actually build a plane while flying it, if that makes sense.
And he's taken over at a time as well, there's been a real lack of top quality La Masia graduates. And I think that actually people get a little bit twisted about how good La Masia is because of that...
freakish generation.
That generation that came through that was so good. But never before or since has there been a generation or a class that has produced that many world-class players. So... I mean, I think you're seeing it across all of Europe. I was having a chat with a friend of mine, shouts to Bert, he's actually an Ajax fan, this morning. And we were kind of talking about, when was the last great Arsenal prospect? It was maybe Jack Wilshere, and that was it, really. So you're seeing it through a lot of European football that as everyone's academies have evolved to be top level, actually producing those players that are that much better than the rest is really, really difficult. Even at clubs like Barcelona,
yeah.
that means they have to spend a lot of money. And I think that they've had a few, not missteps, but some that haven't proved to be worth the value yet. But I think someone like De Jong is great value.
Just one quick point on the, you mentioned the academies there. And it's quite interesting, like as a Spurs fan, I've seen Spurs invest a lot in their academy. When Ancelotti was at Chelsea, they made an active decision to stop signing big players, you know, 28, 29 years old for big money and start investing some of that money into their youth structure. And you're starting to see with the likes of Hudson-Odoi, you know, the fruits of that. So I think a lot of English clubs now are looking at that model. I think Manchester United were the obvious example in England, but it's becoming key to a lot of clubs' philosophy.
Yeah, I mean, like with De Jong and De Ligt at Ajax, I think it's rare for any major club in Europe to produce two guys that good at that age from the same kind of class now, because the margins are tiny.
Right.
Whereas before, the margins were bigger for clubs like Manchester United and Arsenal, who invested in their youth systems a lot earlier than a lot of people when they made that transition to being an academy.
That's an amazing point you've made. It's like this with the globalization of expertise. Mm. You know, certain clubs coached the players a certain way and they came out better. But now, La Masia training techniques are available to everyone.
Yeah.
You know, so you're right. Like, so, and a way actually to get or to reduce competitive advantage for the big teams is just to coach everyone incredibly well, which is why you look at, like, you look at La Liga now and look how late a lot of the top games are decided. Look how tough it is for a team like Barca to beat a team like Girona, whereas before they'd have hammered them. Mm. I mean, you started seeing this at international level where you had, like, you know, England used to beat Turkey 8-0. That's an unthinkable scoreline now.
Yeah, the margins are smaller.
Right, and that to me is so fascinating how you almost wonder if there are clubs who think, we only really have an academy for political purposes because fans want it. If we scrapped our academies and just bought players in the open market, it would actually be cheaper. I'm sure there's clubs that have thought that.
I mean, that's the kind of what makes the achievements of a club like Athletic even more remarkable.
Right.
Is that their academy and their youth structure is so integral to the existence of that club.
Yeah.
And yeah, they still sign players as long as they're, you know, born within the Basque area. But also as well, I think recently you've seen the role or the reason behind having a strong academy change. It's not now just to produce players for the first team. It's also producing assets. Mm. Like you look at Hudson-Odoi, for example, if he moves for 40 million euros, he's played less than 20 games for Chelsea, basically.
Yeah.
You know, that's an asset that you're producing without...
So it's key to the business model because it's some of them, the ones that make the grade, great.
Yeah.
They're a good player that you haven't had to pay anything for. And the ones that don't, well, you've made a big profit.
This is the key thing I think will be for Spurs going forward is that they've got this really good crop of young players coming through.
Yeah.
Not all of those are going to nail down first team places, but they will provide Spurs with much needed revenue if they decide to sell and upgrade.
We can get onto the problems at Spurs maybe in a bit. But I think one of the issues or one of the main issues at Tottenham is that Daniel Levy's seen the success of Harry Kane and thought, oh, great, well, we can produce 11 Harry Kanes, but it doesn't work like that.
Right, absolutely. No, I want to just have a quick, give a quick shout out to Mark Cooper, who was one of people that listened to this podcast in its early days, who wrote for the Celtic Underground website, and I think now helps scout players in South America. And the reason I mention this is because Mark wrote a great essay, which some are online, about the transfer strategy of Porto and Udinese. And about how these clubs basically, you know, I think Alexis Sanchez at Udinese, they brought through these players and just sold them on this incredible premium. And I think Porto, I mean, at the time of writing the article, had made a profit of like over €1 billion on their players. Mm-hmm. That model,
wow.
If you can get that model right. I mean, look at United, we bought Diogo Dalot for like, I think 20 million, 30 million euros, 20 million. That guy's played hardly any games. And from Benfica, you know, sort of competing club in Portugal, Lindelof, what, two or three seasons at Benfica? And it's just this incredible ability to exploit the inequalities in the transfer market. And I just hope, actually, you know, my hope is that clubs like, not so much Athletic because they're constrained by who they can play, but, you know, Spurs produce these players and then just reinvest it. Because I love Spurs, you know, it's not a secret that I think they're an amazing club. But that lack of investment we're now seeing in these close games, where you don't have, you know, Spurs aren't nicking games. They're not nicking games that they should be winning. Mm. They're not winning the close ones. You know, those games that you don't deserve to win. Mm. Spurs lose, and my fear for Spurs is every time Spurs lose, it's a game they deserve to lose. Mm. And they only win games they deserve to win. I very rarely see Spurs win games they don't deserve to. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
The best teams win ugly and Spurs don't win ugly.
Yeah, Man United did it for years and years.
Thank you, And this is not a criticism of Spurs. It's more a kind of like, Spurs need to start winning ugly, I think. It's a big challenge for them.
Yeah.
More on Spurs a bit later, but another interesting transfer, one that intrigues me, I suppose, the most of the window, potentially. Alvaro Morata potentially going to Atletico Madrid on loan with a view to long-term move.
Your boy Alvaro.
I just really like this guy.
I know.
I think it's because he's the kind of dude, if you bumped into him at the local like supermarket, so West London, you wouldn't know what he did for a living and he wouldn't tell you. And he'd probably help like old people there shopping. Like, he's just a nice dude.
What makes you think that?
Because David Luiz was similar. David Luiz would like, when David Luiz lived in West London, he would meet these old ladies and he'd help them with shopping. And like, they just wouldn't know who he was. Yes.
Okay, moving on.
I see him in that mold. I see him in that mold.
Well, maybe he's been focusing too much on helping old ladies and not enough on his finishing.
Alvaro.
Spice.
When he was at Juventus, I thought, okay, we've got a player here.
Right.
Who's going to be one of the best in the world for the next few years. I remember that season that was a season they reached the Champions League final, I think, 2015. Yeah. And he was unplayable.
Yeah.
But he's regressed. And I just don't know why.
Has he regressed, or is he just, that's just his finishing? That's just what he...
I think it's a bit of that and a bit of just systemic stuff as well, though. Because I think that he really thrived in that Juve side and they played two up front. When he went back to Real Madrid for a little bit, he kind of played not alone up front. And at Chelsea, he's been very much alone up front.
Yeah.
And I think that when he's been there, Chelsea have been through a couple of key, you know, two very different managers already, playing two very different ways. And you see this a lot in football. And this is something that, you know, we mentioned the NBA a lot because you and me used to follow it quite a lot. But there's a very key emphasis on fit in the NBA, you know. Not just about how good a player is, but how they fit. You see it when people draft players, the player might be by far the best player in the draft, but with what a team needs, it doesn't fit. So they go for someone lower down. You see this in football a lot of the times and it tends to happen a lot with strikers, that you buy a striker and then you just don't play a system that remotely plays to his strengths. So I think Morata will be better at Atleti.
And Diego Simeone has a good track record of kind of salvaging the careers of some players who you thought might be over. I'm thinking Diego
Gabby.
Costa.
And
at
Gabby,
the
actually.
Yeah.
Gabby was Gabby's on his last legs when Simeone turned up, and it was a revelation.
Yeah. And Felipe Luiz is playing some great football this season. Quite a lot of players make that Chelsea to Atletico move, actually, thinking about it.
It's a good look, to be honest, that move. And the reason I like it so much, I think Thiago did it as well.
Yeah.
The reason I like it so much is because you've got a team that's just waiting to catch fire. Mm. You've got Thomas Lemar, who's kind of like slipping through more key passes now. He's getting into the rhythm of playing for Atleti. And what I think finally might help Morata is the demand of Atletico Madrid is not just goals. So he can contribute in other ways. Even if he doesn't score, Simeone will be like, you're helping the team because we don't score many goals here anyway. Like, there's so much else to do at Atleti. Yeah. You know, if someone else needs to score, it can be Griezmann, but you have goals in you. So your primary responsibility may not be goal scoring. It's going to be link play, which we know you can do, bring the ball from deep, dropping wide, creating space for Griezmann. Like, I suppose like a more mobile version of Olivier Giroud in that sense.
Well, that's right. Actually, like, I would have loved to see more of a Giroud-Morata partnership at Chelsea. Yeah. I actually think that would have been really good for both of them.
Yeah, and the problem is, of course, with that Sarri, just the style that
it's not Sarri's vibe. That's it. Maybe that, like, actually it's more, again, a fit the other way. Like, Morata doesn't really fit with what Sarri wants in terms of a striker, and therefore this season's kind of been a little bit of a write-off for him, and therefore it just makes sense on a lot of
And Sarri's levels. Probably thinking he only needs one striker that plays like that. You know, someone who holds the ball, brings others into play.
And he knows Higuain well, and Higuain, you know, loves him. And
I just want to see Atleti light up the Champions League. And I want Lemar Morata to, like, take flight, really.
Should we flip it and look at Higuain to Chelsea?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, this is a guy that scored goals. I mean, especially for Napoli, he was lethal. Didn't really catch on at Milan, but... I think,
who does these days? sorry, Milan, but that's a systemic issue, isn't it, Milan? It's just a challenge. Yeah.
Talk about rebuilds.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, I think Higuain has everything to be really successful at Chelsea, actually.
I'm a little bit excited about this transfer.
Mm.
Higuain?
Yep.
It puts some spice into the title race, that's for sure.
It's a fiery front line. Personality-wise as well, you're going from Ratu, who's very calm and placid on the field, and then Higuain, who's not
This is true. Yes, it's true.
I'm really looking. I hope they play him and Giroud together, because imagine the gestures that you're going to get from the pair of them. It's going to be, oh.
Do you know how you get certain players who they're not from the country they play in or make their name in, but they look like they're from there? So you look at Higuain, and I've never seen a player that looks more like he should be wearing a toga all the time. Like, he looks like he was, you know what I mean? He looks very, like, I was like, this guy should be in a toga. With access, maybe it's the neck beard. I don't know what it is, but he looks so like he was suited to play in Serie A.
All right, I'm going to move it on. Perisic.
Yeah, interesting. Looks like he's on his way to Arsenal. Had a transfer request.
Yeah, but Arsenal are only loaning players. Is that right?
Yeah, last time I looked, it looked like it was going to be loaned till the end of the season with something like a 30-odd million pound fee if they want it. But the last thing Arsenal really need is to sign another 30-year-old at the moment, because they are due for a big overhaul in the next couple of years. Ozil's 30, Aubameyang's 30, Mkhitaryan's almost 30, or he's about to turn 30. Wow. He's 29 until he's 30. Oh, that's how it works.
Aren't we all?
But, you know, I don't really think... I think Perisic is someone that will help Arsenal out definitely until the end of the season.
Yeah,
he's not the kind of guy I would be looking at long term, especially for the money that he's going to command in terms of wages. But
good player though.
Yeah, good player. Was very heavily linked with Man United a few years ago.
Yeah.
Apparently turned it down.
He saw it was coming.
Yeah.
Something in the woodshed.
You know, he was good at Dortmund. Yeah. Good at, where did he go after Bremen?
Wolfsburg, I think.
Wolfsburg, sorry, yeah. So yeah, intriguing. Not one that I'm kind of mad hyped about as an Arsenal fan, but I think it's at the moment it's just about getting bodies. Arsenal really need a defender.
Yeah.
So bad.
I don't want to dwell on it, but that was the thing. You look at the Arsenal defence, and it's well documented, but the beauty of Arsenal at the moment, to be honest, is at least their problems are easily identifiable. Much better to be like that than to be a kind of like a tooth decay team where you can't see where the immediate pain is coming from. Do it to me.
I mean, Arsenal finished the Man United game in the cup with two centre midfielders and a left back playing centre back in a back four.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was, you know, whatever.
All right. So moving it on, Leicester. This is a surprise, just news on Monday morning that Leicester are possibly in for Youri Tielemans, the Monaco midfielder, 20 million.
I don't like that. I want him to go to Manchester United.
I want him to go to Spurs.
Get their blinkers off.
He's wonderful.
He's a very good player.
Yeah,
and he would improve Leicester, I think, significantly.
I mean, that's a hell of a sign. That's a serious capture.
Yeah,
he has to have a word with his agent, though, because I'm not sure that... I mean, Tielemans is someone who, just 2 years ago, everyone was after.
That reeks of Football Manager, that signing.
There are moves I've seen sometimes when certain midfielders have gone to clubs, and I'm like, your stock is higher than that, and you should aim a bit higher.
Yeah, but also, Monaco have been dreadful this season.
Yeah, but he's Youri Tielemans.
Yeah, but still, I think that he's not quite got the chops yet to command a move to, I think, an elite level thing. I think he's got to do one more, I think. You're nodding at me like I've just done something really bad.
I mean, I just think Tielemans to Leicester, I think he's terrific. And I just think that, I think there's a slightly better club he could go to at this point of his arc, if that's fair to say.
Right, back from the break, we've got some questions.
Ask away.
Posted a tweet from the Rabona Twitter saying, any questions for the podcast? And then proceeded to get some very cheeky questions about Arsenal.
Really?
Yeah. Shouts to Jenna. Did you prefer the Millie Rock or the Moonwalk?
Wow, that's interesting. Because
so I blocked everyone who asked me.
Jenna asked you that.
Yeah, and another one, Namdi David, what about the rumours that Pasha are mulling over a bid for the naming rights of the Arsenal Stadium?
Oh,
wow. You really asked for it. You know, it's funny though. You need to take that on the chin and be like, why are they sending for me? Because people aren't sending for me.
I think it's because I reposted it saying, no questions relating to Arsenal's defence, please.
Could be that, yeah. Could be. It's just funny they sent for you. It's funny that two people sent you.
I think this one's for Musa.
Oh.
From Sean, who's at Shawm. Is Marco Silva a fraud?
Oh
no, he's not a fraud.
Okay, let me rephrase. Is he a catfish?
That word again. No, he's not. He's just coaching in a very, very, very good division, and he's coaching at the level he should be coaching at. That's it, really. Like, you look at all these clubs, and now the tree has been shaken, and, like, you know, the league has fallen the kind of position it should be in. We've never had this quality of coaching in the Premier League before. It's optimal. Like, it's so impressive. Like, in terms of top to bottom quality of coaching, I don't mean the three at the top. I mean, week in, week out, the quality of expertise in terms of coaching is terrific. And each coach brings a difficult tactical approach. You might argue that Marco Silva is slightly underachieving given the resources at his disposal. But at the same time, you look at the league table, it's pretty much where it should be, isn't it?
I don't think he's a fraud, but Everton concede way too many goals to be considered a top team. And that happened under Roberto Martinez.
Right.
And it's happening under Marco Silva. And the previous editions of Marco Silva haven't been that great either. I mean, he started well at Hull, but ultimately they were relegated, lost their last game 7-1 at home to Spurs, fired by Watford, and they've improved since. And he's not doing well at Everton. And I don't want to say he's a fraud, but I kind of agree with the question to an extent. Like, I just don't think he's cutting it.
He's not an elite manager. I think that's the thing. I think that the Premier League has humbled him. So if you look at where they are in the league, Everton, they're 3 points behind Watford. Watford have fewer resources. Mm-hmm. They can't afford to drop, you know, these same sums that Everton drop on players.
Yeah.
Everton have a pretty talented cast, yeah. A pretty talented squad. And you have to say that actually, if you gave Eddie Howe the Everton job, I think you'd see a better
team. I think so. And if you, and also Everton have ambitious owners. You know, there's a new stadium coming, Bramley Moor. And as you say, I mean, 50 million on Sigurdsson. I think it was 50 million, right?
Well, that's got me thinking, Eddie Howe at Everton. Can you imagine? That would be a game changer, I think.
That could work. That could work.
That would be a really nice appointment.
Do you know what? Everton, Goodison Park has been the graveyard for a lot of top coaches. I mean, I think in Ronald Koeman recently as well.
Yeah, it's a tricky one.
I'm a bit, jury's out on Koeman because I think he's more of an international manager.
He did a good job at Southampton.
Incredible job at Southampton.
I just think he made the wrong move to Everton.
Yeah, I think he left too soon at Southampton. But I mean, yeah, Everton though, conceded one more goal than Arsenal. Mm. Same amount of goals as Manchester United.
To be honest,
Chelsea down, like people are conceding goals left, right and centre.
They have this zonal marking system that Marco Silva just persists with. And they just do not look solid whatsoever.
They also have too many number 10s and they need a proper striker.
Yeah. I mean, coaches deserve time. And I always think back to the first year of Pochettino where it was kind of average. And, you know, he was given time and it's worked out.
Mm. Can I just say one thing? I want to say one more thing. Thank you, because that's an excellent question.
Yeah, it's a great question.
We've got another question from Joe Gould. And this actually came in a couple of days ago, but I forgot to reply to him. He's at 12th Yank on Twitter. And he said, since you live in Berlin, do you go to Hertha games? Hertha fan here. He's in Cincinnati, Ohio. Short answer, Joe, is not in the winter because it's freezing at the Olympiastadion. It's the highest point in Berlin. And it's very cavernous. And in the winter, it is very, very, very cold.
Yeah, last game I went there was Hoffenheim. When was that? November, maybe?
Good game. That was it. Quite a few goals.
3-3, yeah. Hertha are playing Bayern Munich on the 6th of February. So maybe we'll be going.
We'll be at that game?
Yeah, maybe.
Another question from our friend Mashal St. Paddy. This is probably one for Michael, I reckon. He kind of mentioned it, but views on Alphonso Davies' debut and would Callum Hudson-Odoi walk straight into the Bayern team? I suppose we kind of covered the Hudson-Odoi stuff.
Yeah.
But Alphonso.
Yeah, he only played a few minutes, so it's difficult to judge. I think he's going to have to kind of settle for 5-10 minutes for most games. He's very much a young player who needs to establish himself at a club where the hierarchy is very solid. But he has great technical ability. He's lightning fast. His first touch is amazing. I think he's someone who can really add something, like a bit of an X factor to Bayern. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more of him. I'll certainly be watching out for him in the coming weeks.
All right, one more from Hamdan at Hamdan EB1. Why do you think that Duvan Zapata is not on the radar of more Premier League teams? Surely he is one of the most informed number nines in the world right now. Scored at the weekend for Atalanta. I agree he is under the radar. I mean, to be honest, I've not seen as much of him as I would have liked.
He hasn't played for Colombia for some time, has he?
He was left out of the squad for the World Cup, played a few friendlies before the World Cup. But I mean, he's having his best season by far. Mm.
But isn't there something about strikers brought in from abroad and being unsure whether they're going to score or deliver? Look at someone like Soldado, for example, Vincent Janssen. You've got these brilliant players who come in with these great reputations and deservedly so, and they come to the Premier League and for whatever reason, it's hard to transfer that across. So almost it's like clubs are waiting for someone else to take a chance on them before they take a chance on them.
Yeah. I think also as well at the age that he is, so he's 27,
right?
15 goals in 21 league games this season for Atalanta. But I think that say if he was 23,
resale value,
I think with that record, I think more people would probably take a punt on him.
Yeah.
But I mean, his previous best goal scoring record was actually the season before this one, where he got 11 in 31 for Samp.
It's a gamble.
It's a tricky one. I mean, I could see him making a Premier League move. I'm not sure if... Actually, do you know what we were talking about before? It might be, depending on price, could be someone like Everton would take a gamble on someone
like
that.
The problem with that is people know that Everton are going to spend that money, and so the premium just gets yanked up. He might actually, to be honest, he might well be on their radar. They wouldn't be unaware of someone with a record like that, but then they're like, well...
I know. Yeah, I mean, I also think that some of the signings that you're going to see to the Premier League from Serie A are going to be a lot more like Torreira, kind of slightly under the radar... 20 to 25 million euro kind of price. And I mean, Torreira's 21, so, or 22 or whatever. So, yeah, tricky one. Maybe we'll ask James Horncastle when we next get him on the show.
Can I say, these are all great questions and we encourage many more of their type, including questions trolling Ryan about Arsenal, because there's not enough of that on the podcast.
Yeah, and if no one does it, I will.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, as long as I don't get trolled enough by these two. So yeah, sure, why not? Pile on. Yeah, thanks for the questions. Any more questions, tweet us individually or at Rabonamag, or can we email?
hello@rabonamag.com.
There you go. Another break. I need a coffee refill.
Why not? Yeah.
Back from the break, one of us is happy. Musa's beloved Manchester United went to the Emirates and danced their way to victory.
Yeah.
I'm not happy.
Oh, come on.
I'm not happy because you're not happy. Don't derive any pleasure.
United counter-attacking to score a third goal at Arsenal. Not sure we've seen that before.
Not at all.
I wanted to say about the FA Cup, because a lot of football podcasts cover it in detail.
Right.
And I salute them for that, because I find the FA Cup early rounds really overwhelming.
There's a lot of games.
Really hard to keep on top of.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, we don't kind of tend to do match by match run throughs anyway. So right. I think if you did, you know, that helps. But
yeah,
I couldn't, I was like swimming in football this weekend. I didn't know where to go.
You know what? 13, I think, of the 20 Premier League teams are out already.
That's nuts. Ah.
13 of 20.
That's incredible.
You know, I think that part of the reason that the big clubs don't take it seriously, but they have to prioritize, and the fact that they have to play quarterfinals in March, semifinals in April, final in May, it's at a time when Liverpool, Man City they've basically got bigger fish to fry. And I think there's an argument that to preserve the FA Cup, the League Cup should be scrapped, because then that would allow the FA Cup, you could bring it forward a bit, maybe have the final in March, something like that. And I don't know, I don't want to just see the big teams like have it easier,
right?
But I just want to see an FA Cup that's like competed for.
I just think the League Cup shouldn't have Premier League sides in it, personally.
Ooh. Yeah, maybe.
Because that's something
League Cup.
Yeah, this is something that would never happen, but would be amazing. But still give him a Europa League spot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you know what would be really cool as well?
Hashtag for the good of the game.
Here's something as well. Have a wild card. So have a non-league club in there.
Yeah.
So like have a football league, like championship and below.
Yeah.
But then have like a kind of a wild card of like two non-league clubs.
No, it's the Football League Cup though.
No, but then I'd like the idea of just a joker in the pack. Come on, maybe. Why not?
But I think that you may hear some clubs from 10 down in the Premier League like wanting to participate in the League Cup.
Right, yeah.
But I often think that those teams, a lot of the time, they're focused on staying up.
Yeah, that's especially true. This is what I mean, especially at that time of year where it's those crunch games between March and May, you have to like win to stay up.
I think now especially that like the top six is the top six and it's not the top four or the top three like it was 5-10 years ago.
But
and
the League Cup is attractive to the bigger teams because it's done and dusted by February. The final's February 24th. Mm-hmm.
If you had a league, that's actually a brilliant suggestion. FA Cup final in March, you'd get a lot of people pushing back on that. To start with, you would. But here's the thing. If you made a weekend out of it, you made it like, you know, FA Cup in March and bring back all the other traditions of it, right? So having you know, the, you know, like Villa Park.
Liverpool in white
suits. And no, but really make it a grand, like a stand, a really sort of grand standalone, a chance for clubs to win early season silverware and almost like set the tone for the rest of the season as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's just a great idea.
Moving it forward to March is great.
Very forward thinking.
I think it's a good, I
mean, they're not competing with the sort of the Champions League as well and all that other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, it just doesn't, great you idea. Know, at come May, like no matter where you are in the football pyramid, you've got something else that you really need to play for. So right. unless you're mid table and you can't go in, get into Europe or go down or get promoted into the playoffs or whatever.
Yeah, it's, the downside to the suggestion, of course, is the smaller clubs will say you're just making it easier for the bigger ones. But it's actually more about preserving the prestige of the tournament.
Well, saying that, though, you know, we had a few big results this weekend. Wimbledon beating West Ham.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't think that would change if the final was in March.
No, right. true,
you know,
true,
and
true.
I think that was a massive result for Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And, you know, Shrewsbury and Wolves going to a replay.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? There was a couple of really big ones.
Well, Spurs lost to Palace.
I really liked Andros Townsend's tweet to that guy. Did you see that?
No.
Where some guy tweeted at him saying something like, you played like 50 games in 7 years and you're not celebrating, like kind of get... And he was like, actually, mate, it was however many games and I was there from the age of 8.
Yeah.
So right,
yeah.
told.
Yeah. Yeah. Townsend was, he's been great against in all of these big games that Palace have played recently.
He scored in all of them.
Man City scored that thunderous volley.
He's the Robin Hood of Premier League
Liverpool
football.
Liverpool scored.
He's basically just coming and just like taking the stash back to South London.
Yeah.
And Connor Wickham's first goal in his first start for something like, what was it, 3 years or something?
Yeah.
He was sort of the Bojan of English youth football, wasn't he? He was scoring so many goals, Connor Wickham. Like, he was just so far ahead of his class.
If anyone's going to score their first goal in 3 years, it's going to be against Spurs.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
it's all a bit Waitrose, isn't it? It's just not quite the elite content. You know, you look at Spurs right now and it's kind of like...
I mean, I thought Waitrose was like high-end.
Well, it depends what circles you're moving in. I mean, you look at Spurs and they're kind of like...
What supermarket do you want
hang
to
on, hang on,
out?
Hang on. I think this is important.
No.
Can
no,
you
no,
tweet
no.
us at Rabonimag your tiered supermarket?
Listen. Those who know. Those who know what I'm talking
well, hang
about.
On, right. So what's Champions League? Right, we need Champions League, Europa League, mid-table, relegation zone. Tier your supermarket.
Don't worry, this is the conversation about, you know, the footballing.
And which one of them does Alvaro Morata shop in?
Wow. Ooh. Do you know what? I'm not going to drop him in it. Listen, that's what you call deflection. Look, let's get back to Spurs. Spurs, it's like, you know, it's high quality, but it's not the very top table. And this is the problem I have with Spurs. It's like, they said before, the Pochettino project doesn't need to win trophies to be validated. Okay, that's fine. I get that. At the same time, and this is, I think I said this before, Spurs don't win ugly. Mm-hmm. When Spurs win, they deserve to win. But Spurs don't steal the close games. Juventus Champions League, they didn't win.
Totally.
Right?
Do you know
this is my frustration with them.
Do you know what I think? The lineup from Spurs this weekend with no Eriksen, he was available but didn't play. Alderweireld, Vertonghen was taken off at half time. I think like it was almost a message from Pochettino to the board, like, this is what you've given me. Three key players out, Kane, Son, Ali, but I can't keep playing Eriksen every week. You know, it's a message. It is a message from Pochettino. I'm convinced of that. And that's why he's persevering with Llorente when he knows he's got other options that would be more suitable. And Spurs have a wonderful first 11. But when one of them is out, two of them are out. But at the moment, they've got five or six players like unavailable or fatigued or at the Asian Cup or whatever. And they just don't have that drop off from Kane, Ali and Son to what they have. Is frankly not good enough. And, you know, this is a key period for Daniel Levy. Like, he either invests and he shows he's serious about this project, he can't continue like turning a profit. You know, he's done it really well, but he's been helped by a world-class coach. And at the moment, I wouldn't blame Pochettino for leaving Spurs.
Do you think he understands? Do you think Levy understands just what he's got? I don't know that he does.
I don't think he does.
He can't. I don't think he can.
I don't think so. I think he seems to... It's almost like a few years ago, like Spurs didn't have a left-sided player. It was just so obvious that they just needed that and it would be significantly better. And it was like he just refused to like give the money to sign these players. It's almost like he's very, very stubborn.
And Levy's argument is probably like this stubbornness has got us this far. You can argue, you can see how he would, but he almost needs to delegate or work with an alter ego or someone who's slightly spikier, who gets him out of his comfort zone. Because I remember when they brought in Sissoko, they spent 30 million on Sissoko, and that money could have gone towards a game-changing player. And the conservatism of Levy was interesting there, because if they bought a kind of young Ericsson, you know, or a player like a kind of a Sancho, a player that like really is a game breaker.
And this was pre-Neymar, so money, 30 million went a bit further.
Right. And to me, that the Sissoko signing, I looked at that, I look at that as a pivotal point for Spurs. So I think if you bought a game-breaking player then, like a couple of players, a Mahrez and a fullback, that would have, Spurs could have won that league.
But you know what? There's players at the moment that are knocking about who are available.
Spurs kind of strike me a little bit like, you know, you see, you know, like A Beautiful Mind, the film, and you see all the big like formulae on the wall. When it's all there, it's perfect almost.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? You take one piece out or you make one typo and the whole thing just goes to shit.
Sorry. I like this analogy.
But me and Michael were chatting the day after the Chelsea game in the Carabao Cup. And I just kind of said that massive reactions after that game are just completely uncalled for, because at the end of the day, they lost to a side on penalties. Like we were saying earlier, the margins are so small. And the players Spurs had out, when they went 2-0 down, you know, bringing it back to penalties anyway. So, I mean, I totally get what you're saying. I think it's going to be a really, really key off-season for Spurs at the end of the season.
Every off-season is a key off-season for Spurs. And do you know what? I don't think it's about anymore like who Spurs are going to sign. It's can they keep hold of Christian Eriksen, for example?
True.
His contract is winding down. He's been in negotiations and he hasn't said that, you know, he hasn't said anything to make Tottenham fans think he's going to go, but Spurs fans are looking at this now and thinking, oh my God, if Real Madrid come in for Eriksen, the whole thing falls apart because him and Kane are so crucial.
But have you ever seen Spurs need a defender so, so, so bad and then sign Andrei Arshavin?
Oh my goodness.
So what you've got to remember is that
yeah, but he was a cult signing.
Could always get worse. You know, was it the
what a consolation that
pessimists
is.
Say it's half the glass is half empty, optimists say it's half full.
Yeah.
Spurs fans break the glass.
Spend money. Buy more glasses.
Can I say one thing as well from a storyteller's perspective? I love the way this podcast has evolved from a conversation about short-term transition with transfers into a wider conversation.
We let people in behind the curtain as well. We had no idea what we were going to talk about today.
This is the world's first free jazz football podcast. It's improv.
It was so improv. We should have had a round of applause after every point.
You can add those in afterwards. Can I say, audience, thank you so much for joining us, bearing with us. It's been an absolute pleasure as always. This was a slightly warmer podcast. That's why the conversation was perhaps more
toasty.
Fruitful and toasty. The takes were certainly hotter. Ryan, thanks again. Wonderful to have you here. Michael, lovely. And most of all, most importantly, our listeners, thank you so much. Tell a friend, tell an enemy. Please leave a review. Please spread the word. You can find us on social media on all the usual channels at RabonaMag. Have a lovely week. Catch you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.